Hello and welcome to another episode of Nonprofit Vision. This is your host, Greg Nielsen, President and CEO of Nielsen Training and Consulting, where we work with nonprofit leaders and organizations all across the country to translate your vision into reality. I want to welcome everybody back to the podcast. If you're enjoying the podcast, I encourage you to do a couple of things. You can subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform, and also encourage you to leave us a rating and review on your favorite platform and share the podcast with your friends, colleagues, and coworkers as we continue to build support across the nonprofit community. Today's conversation is going to be dedicated to, in honor of Women's History Month, I have asked a colleague of mine, Crystal Cherry, to join the podcast today. And we're going to talk about the important contributions that women have made on nonprofit boards, continue to make today, and hopefully will make even more in the future. So Crystal is the founder and CEO of The Board Pro. Crystal Cherry, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Greg. I'm so excited to be here.
It is a pleasure to have you joining us. Crystal, tell our listeners, for those who may not be aware of your work, your background, tell us a little bit about yourself and your work.
Yeah, thank you. So I've been working in the board space for about 3 years now. I'm a recovering nonprofit fundraiser. So I worked as a fundraiser for 23 years, doing frontline fundraising, planning special events, writing grants, working with alumni, working with corporate sponsors, everything that fundraising entails. So I did that for 23 years, then worked as a consultant for over a year with a consulting firm as their fundraising consultant. And then after that, just decided I needed a change and I was a little burnt out and I decided I wanted to shift. And I kept thinking, Greg, what can I do? What can I do to stay relevant in the nonprofit sector? I love the sector. I didn't want to leave that work. And what can I do? So I decided to take all of my fundraising skills, all of what I learned over the last 23 years, and take it into the boardroom, as I had sat in so many, where I watched so many boards who were confused, who were apathetic, who were not sure what they should be doing as boards. I watched CEOs go into boardrooms and struggle to keep their boards engaged and to teach them about fundraising and all the things that we know that boards should be doing. And I thought, this is where I can land. This is where I can show up and show out and show some of the things that I've learned doing the work and support nonprofits and their boards to thrive. So that's what I've been doing for the last 3 years. I love the work. It makes my heart throb. And so I'm glad to be here today to talk about women on boards.
So, and Crystal, for those who are listening, everyone, I encourage you to connect with Crystal on LinkedIn, reach out to her directly. You can see her energy and enthusiasm and passion for the work shine through, and it shines through on social media and the other platforms where she's active as well. Crystal, we're going to be talking about women on boards today, and I'll just share a brief anecdote. When I made the transition, I'm a recovering nonprofit CEO myself. When I made the transition to nonprofit leadership, the first organization that I led, when I walked in the door, it was a staff of 19.
Wow.
18 females, and I was the lone male.
Oh, wow.
That was my introduction to nonprofit organizations, but it underscored a reality that demographically, when we think about the nonprofit sector, there are a tremendous number of women making important impacts and doing important work across the nonprofit sector. If you could maybe talk a little bit about those demographics and what you've seen from an impact standpoint.
Absolutely. We know that more than half of nonprofit employees are women, right? We make up a good part of the sector when we think about, you know, the millions of employees who support nonprofit work. There are 1.4 million nonprofits. Most of the people who work there are women, right? And so we are in the sector. We are making strides. We are making a difference in our communities, right? But when it comes to leadership roles, when it comes to being the executive director or the CEO or sitting on boards, we are a fraction of those who are actually serving. And so Less than half. I think it's about 42, 43% of board members are women. And many of us, even when we sit on boards, we don't have leadership roles on boards. We're not the board chair. We're not the board governance chair. We don't sit on committees and lead those committees. And so I just think it's really important to encourage women. You have the power to take the work that you're doing in the nonprofit sector and escalate it. Go one step higher. Be a board chair, be a board member, and sit on a board so that you can help transform the world through board service. I really do believe that we have so much power in board seats and we don't leverage it. So I really want to encourage my women today who are listening to take back your power, sit on a board, and help make the world better.
And Crystal, it's important just to push on those demographics a little bit more. I think you mentioned the figure about 43% of board seats are held by women. One of the interesting things that I've noticed in my career, and I can't cite the exact study right now, but it was organizations that had a budget size of $1 million or less were actually a majority female board members. Once organizations eclipsed that $1 million budget threshold, the numbers almost flipped and it was 55-45 male versus female. So there's some real obstacles right now for women, traditionally, historically, in pressing into leadership roles, pressing into board service, but then also in organizations that are older, more mature, have larger budget sizes, there's a real opportunity for them to prioritize female leadership as well.
Right. And I think the larger organizations do typically lean male, lean white, older male, right? And
Yes.
hopefully that's changing with the times, all that's happened over the last couple of years. We know that there's been a push to diversify our board, not only with women, but with people of color, with people who represent the communities that our organizations are serving. And so I'm hoping that we'll see 5 years from now that the work that we've been doing in the last 3 years will have come, will have come around, and that we'll see the fruit of our labor, and we'll start seeing not only more women, but people of color, people who are homeless, people who are disabled, people who are LGBTQI on our boards, and that they're more accepted to come to the boards as they are.
Crystal, I don't know if you ever have board members who push back on the importance of diversity, whether it's from a gender standpoint or ethnicity. Occasionally, I'll have board members bring this up. And one of the quotes that I like to share with them is that the people in the room determine the questions that are asked. And so when it comes to the importance of having a diversity of thought, a diversity of skill set, lived experiences on the board, that's because as boards confront difficult challenges and hard questions, we want to have that diversity of perspective in the room to elevate important questions that others may not think to ask.
Yeah, as my good friend and colleague, Dr. Renee Rubin Ross says, those who are closest to the problems have the solutions, right? And so we often find that working with boards, a lot of them are so removed and distant from the communities they're actually serving, right? And so it's great to have board members who have the ability to make big connections for you and to write big checks for you. But we also want board members who know firsthand what it's like to be in those communities, whether it be someone who is not able-bodied, whether it be someone who has been homeless, right, or who was a pregnant teen. It's so wonderful to have those individuals on your board who have that lived experience, whose experiences, who have been in those communities, who can tell you firsthand what some of the needs are. Because for so long, we have nonprofit executives telling the story of these individuals in these communities without knowing firsthand what it's like to be in those communities. We've not asked those individuals, how would you like your story told? What do you want the world to know about you? We make presumptions on what we think that the world should know about these individuals, but having these people on our boards, telling those stories, making sure that the board is staying focused on the needs of the community and not the needs of the board, or even the needs of the organization, right? Because sometimes we're so focused on mission. We want to make sure that we're serving. We've been told that duty of care and duty of obedience, we have to serve the mission of the organization. And sometimes the people get lost and are wanting to make sure that we're serving the organization and not so much the people. So we're really talking about community-centered work, making sure that the community is not lost. And I think often when we have board members who are removed, they don't understand that.
Crystal, I've been privileged to be around some phenomenal board leaders who were female. And I always I struggle with generalizations, and I don't want to lean into or embrace generalizations. But in your experience, what are some of the important skills, perspectives, talents that women have brought to boards that you've been a part of and worked with?
Yeah, so whenever women join anything, Greg, I have to tell you, we just rock. Whenever women join things,
I agree.
we jump in, we roll up our sleeves. And so we found that women-heavy boards, they perform better. So they really help with engagement. They're really interested in making sure there's some strategic planning going on. They want to make sure that the boards are evaluating themselves at the end of the year to make sure that they did what they said they were going to do, and they raise more money. I mean, just ask any mom who's a Girl Scout mom, right? We are socialized. We have to get out there and to make things happen. And so we find that boards who have more women raise more money. They're more strategic in terms of making sure that there's an actual strategic plan that we're actually using, because we know we'll create a strategic plan in a minute, right? And then that strategic plan goes on the shelf, right? But we're finding that boards that are heavy with women, those strategic plans are being looked at and actually being acted out. And we're also showing that they're raising more money, and then they're also evaluating themselves more. So there are some things that are go into play that, and then women, we're just passionate. We've been told that, in the nonprofit space that, when we were talking about branding, we always know that there are key words and key images that will make women light up. Babies, soft puppies, even elderly, right? So there are certain things that words that we use that resonate with women. I think all of that goes into play when we're talking about serving on the board. We're just passionate, and sometimes in ways that men are just aren't. Men are more autocratic in the way that they think. Sometimes not as emotional, right? And so we know that when we jump into things happen. And so I just know that having women on your board often means that your organization will be better in the end.
We talk a lot about balance, and we talk about a lot about diversity in nonprofit boards, but it's also important to understand that people don't just have one identity. There are as many barriers as there are for women serving on nonprofit boards. Women of color have additional barriers on top of that for board leadership. If you could maybe talk a little bit about how that complexity adds to some of the challenges in board leadership.
Right. Well, so I know from having have to work with a few DEI clients that individuals of color who sit on boards often feel unseen. They are not considered when it's time to promote board members to higher roles, such as the governance chair or even the board chair. They don't feel sometimes that what they say is weighed equally. They don't have an equal say in making decisions, that people can be cliquish, right?
Yes.
And they are often not considered. And so I know that all of those things matter for people of color, whether you're a man or a woman on a board, but particularly for women, right? And so there are some assumptions that are being made that we don't have the same influence, we don't have the same money to give, we don't have the same power, and so therefore we're going to overlook you when it's time to promote within to powerful positions on the board. And so yeah, those are some of the challenges that women of color have experienced and are still experiencing today. And just having one woman of color on your board doesn't mean your board is diverse, right? You want to make sure you have, women who represent different groups. And then also not even, I just talked about women in some of the gender roles that we presume, but if you're going to really be open and have a culture of belonging, not even assigning gender, because we know there are a lot of folks who come to our board who are from different communities, who are from the gay and lesbian community, who don't subscribe to gender roles, right? And so you may have someone on your board who's non-binary. She's in her body, she's a female, but she may proclaim to be non-binary. So we can't make presumptions about people about gender as well.
When you talk to boards who are interested in promoting belonging, so not just diversity, not just numbers, I'm curious the advice that you give to kind of the traditional, the white male board member versus the individual of color. So it's two different messages. There's how do you create a culture of belonging? And then for individuals who come from traditionally underrepresented groups, how do you have the confidence? How do you have the assertiveness to see yourself and to push yourself for those leadership roles as well. So it's kind of a culture thing, but also a how do you express that confidence and that assertiveness as well?
Yeah, so you can't talk about DEI without talking about power, right? And so one of the
Absolutely.
Things that we talk about is, you know, when you make room for other folks, it's not, you know, we're asking you to make room and make room for them at the table so that they can have a voice at the table. And it doesn't mean your voice is less important, right? So we're not taking away power from anyone. We're sharing power so that other people can come to the table just as they are, whether they come to the table sitting or whether they want to stand at the table, whether they come to the table in a wheelchair, or they just... whether they come to the table with nothing at all, we want to say to them, you're welcomed at this table. What you think and what you feel and what you say matters at this table. We're going to weigh it as equally as the guy that's been at this table for 15 years. You might be new to the table. Your voice is equally as important, and we're going to weigh it the same. So this culture of belonging, it's not only a safe space, because we talk about safe spaces all the time, but a brave space. Where I, as a person in a wheelchair, or someone who is gay, or someone who is disabled, or maybe I don't make as much money, I can't give 50,000, I can only give 500. I can come to this table and say what's on my mind. I can weigh in on the decision. I can help with some kind of policy. I can help to amend the bylaws, right? And what I think and what I say and what I feel matters just as much as the guy over here who gives the $50,000 check. And that really is what belonging is, a space where no matter who you are and how you show up, you feel just as comfortable and just as important in that room as anybody else. And that's the space that we're trying to create. And it's not about you having less power or less say. You can still weigh in, but let her weigh in, let him weigh in, let they weigh in and have some say as well.
I love framing that conversation around shared power. The other word that comes to mind as I hear you speaking is trust, right? As a board, how much do we trust one another? How much do I trust that if I do say something, if I do put myself out there, that what I say is going to be respected, is going to be heard, is going to be seen. So yes. That concept of trust is interwoven in there as well.
You know, Greg, and one of the things I do, because I work a lot with, as I mentioned, Dr. Renee Rubin Ross, and we do a big DEI dive experience for our boards, and we really talk about trust and getting to know one another, right? Yeah. And so we do this exercise called sharing your race stories, where we sit around and we talk about our backgrounds, our childhood, what we were taught about race, what we were taught about gender, like all of the misconceptions that we have, the biases that we have, and we all have them, so no one is free of them. And so once we start learning about, oh, you came up in a culture where race wasn't discussed, gender wasn't discussed, we were told that women shouldn't make as much as men make, you know, we start to understand why people think and behave the way they do, and then people will start to relax and maybe give people grace. If someone says something that might be offensive, they might not even know they're offending you, and knowing a little bit about their background, you realize this is not coming from a place of malice. And so your job is to maybe say to them, you know, listen, what you said to me was offensive, maybe you didn't know that, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to repair it, right? So we say this is a space where we're trusting each other. We can fumble, but it's our responsibility to repair once we make a fumble. And so that's all built on trust and getting to know one another as people, right? And often we're running into a board meeting after work, you know, you're stamping a few reports, you know, you say yay, nay, you raise your hand, and then you leave and you don't know who's sitting next to you. And so we're telling boards it's just as important for them to get to know one another so they can learn who they are, trust one another, and then they can make good decisions about the organization.
Crystal, this Women's History Month, we celebrate the women in nonprofit leadership, women throughout nonprofit organizations, women who serve and lead nonprofit boards, also celebrate and honor women like yourself who have dedicated their career to supporting nonprofit organizations, building up the ecosystem around us. Thank you for all that you do. Before we wrap up, if anyone wants to get more information or connect with you directly, give our listeners the best way to reach out to you directly.
Thank you, Greg. And, you know, I'm actually having a webinar next Tuesday, March 28th, a panel discussion actually with some with four powerful women who sit on nonprofit boards. And we're going to be talking about power shifting and making sure that women have a space on nonprofit boards. March 28th at 2 o'clock. Go to my website, theboardpro.com, to get more information. Register on Eventbrite. And we hope to see you next week. Thank you, Greg, for having me. This is
no
awesome.
No problem. Crystal, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. Thank you for all of our listeners who are taking the time to enjoy the podcast. And again, just a reminder, if you're enjoying the podcast, share it with your friends, your colleagues, your coworkers. Leave us a rating and review and make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out on any of the new episodes that are coming up. Thanks so much and stay well.